Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up. This is the Rose, Rose Colombo. Welcome. Welcome, everyone, to Colombo Chronicles Live. I am the Rose, Rose Colombo, and I represent love because that's what roses do. Roses represent love, and love is what we must begin to send out into the universe because wars and battles and hate and hurt and pain can all be conquered by love. The Bible tells us to love thy neighbor as you love yourself. It sounds so simple. It appears to be simple. It's a commandment by God, but a very difficult commandment, it appears, for the majority of us who remain unconscious of the word love when things happen in our life. We don't exercise love every day because sometimes we react or we speak out without love. Imagine how many lives could have been saved or saved in the future, and how many people we hurt every day with our actions or words. We must be conscious of who we are hurting with our words and our actions, because we refuse to follow that simple commandment, love your neighbor as you love yourself, which is what God commanded in the Bible. Today, it is more difficult for Americans and people around the world to show love, because love includes seeing the sparkle in people's eyes, seeing their expressions, seeing smiles, laughter, hearing voices of those we love to communicate with, and we've always communicated with during our lifetime, or a new person that comes into our life. But it appears that we are being stifled because of communist China unleashing the COVID-19 coronavirus on the world. But do we really have to be fearful of each other? Do we not tolerate people who can't wear a mask because they have health issues, breathing issues, or emotional issues wearing the mask? Or they're just healthy, free Americans who believe that they are free to work and maintain their businesses and jobs and sustain the necessities of life, such as shelter, food, medicine, travel, education, clothing, etc., rather than being forced into poverty as healthy Americans, because coronavirus goes all the way back to the cold, to SARS, to MERS, to all the flu viruses. We have 22 trillion viruses inside our body, says a very prominent doctor, and we have an immune system built in by God. And God, as long as you take care of your immune system by eating right and exercising and getting sunshine and taking all the recommendations that are needed, vitamins, supplements, foods, drinks, you should be pretty healthy, and it doesn't affect as many people as it does people over 80 and with anyone with underlying pre-existing conditions, according to the doctors. And they say that the lockdowns, 35,000 plus international doctors are now speaking out and being shadow banned or banned by social media, who are coming together and fighting back and even filing lawsuits saying the lockdowns are causing more suicides, spousal, domestic abuse, poverty, which leads to deep depression, anger, frustration, divorce, and suicides. And less than 1% of the population die from COVID. So are the doctors correct, the ones that are being shadow banned, tens of thousands around the world? Or is Dr. Fauci and Bill Gates and the Democrat blue states who are locking us down, where people are losing their businesses by the thousands and people are losing their jobs by the millions, is that healthy? So it is a toss-up. It's your choice. You decide. You do your homework, your research. Try to find out as much information as you want, because poverty doesn't seem to be the answer to recovery for anyone. And we have more people standing in lines today for food that never had to in their lifetime in the greatest nation in the world that has a surplus of food. And yet we are running out of food for those who are being forced into poverty, into homelessness, because they've lost their American dream, which was owning their business, their life savings, their livelihood, and seeing their employees being losing their jobs permanently, or their hours cut, or their pay cut. So this is a very serious issue for the world, for America, because we're the leaders in the world. And as the leaders, it is our duty and our responsibility to fight back for freedom, for healthy people, because we always know if we have a cold or a flu that we stay home and we take care of ourselves and we try to stay away from everyone, right? Right. Then we go back to work and go on with our business. But apparently the states are now our daddy, because we are too small-minded to understand what to do for ourselves to remain healthy. So look up the law on the necessities of life, because as an American citizen, the law mandates that all healthy Americans, or just Americans, period, who are free people, have a right to work and a right to sustain the necessities of life. But on that note, we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts, because this is the part of our show on Colombo Chronicles Live that I love. We have authors and experts from around the world, but mostly from around America, who are prominent experts in their fields. And today we have a very special author, and we're going to tell you a little bit more about this dynamic author, Michael Antler, when we come back from this important message. So don't touch that dial, because you will want to hear what Michael Antler has to share about his latest book, hot off the press, Josephus, a novel. Josephus, a novel. So don't touch that dial.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up, because on Colombo Chronicles Live, every week on part one, we have a wonderful author and expert. And again today, we have Michael Antler. He was born in Los Angeles, California in 1983. At a young age, he moved to Maryland with his family, and he completed his secondary school studies in Montgomery County at James Hubert Blake High in 2001. He was the very first graduating class. He was accepted into the University of Virginia, and he studied business, graduating from the McIntyre School of Commerce in 2006, specializing in e-marketing. We all need someone to help us with e-marketing. Isn't that the truth today? After a couple of years in corporate America, he decided to go back to school. He graduated from Gongaza University School of Law with a Juris Doctorate, and that was the 100th graduating class. Disinterested in the practice of law, Michael chose to pursue a life dream and write a novel. He hopes one day to see his words brighten the silver screen. Michael loves water sports, going to the symphony, theater, playing chess and pinball, and of course he loves dogs, especially pugs. He currently enjoys living in the desert in beautiful Palm Springs, California. So let's welcome Michael Antler to Colombo Chronicles, and let's say hello. Hi, Michael Antler. Welcome to Colombo Chronicles.
Hi, Rose. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited about the conversation we're going to have today.
Well, it sounds really exciting because you, Michael Antler, are the creator of the new historical fiction book, Josephus, a novel, and that sounds really intriguing to me and my audience. This book recounts the history of the First Roman-Jewish War from starting in 66 A.D., and at this time, Nero ruled the world and Judea was a Roman client state. So, to get started, why don't you tell us why you became a writer? Because you went to law school and you left law school to reach your American dream, which was to be a writer and an author of an award-winning novel.
Okay, well, you know, the goal was to practice law, but that was when I entered law school. When I exited law school and I actually graduated, the goal was not to practice law. And I knew that I had to figure out something else to do just because I didn't like the way that the adults were practicing. And it frankly, it was changing who I was. And I was actually, you know, like, doing things I'd never done before, like swearing at the computer screen. The computer screen didn't really hurt me at all, but, you know, it just kind of changes you. And so I said, I have to do something else. It's good education. I can obviously teach, but, you know, I really didn't want to do that necessarily unless it was at a high level. So I said, well, I've always been pretty good at words, and now that I just went through this crucible of an experience called law school, I actually have some confidence because, you know, they make you write papers that are hundreds of pages long, and they make you read hundreds of pages a day. So it gives you confidence to work with words, and certainly I think that if I hadn't gone through that, Josephus wouldn't exist.
Yes, I know several people who went through law school and then they actually went into law and then they quit and became an engineer or something else because they just didn't care for the law as they were taught in law school. And so I'm an advocate for justice, and so I wrote a book called Fight Back Legal Abuse, so I totally get it. Totally, 100%.
Well, you know, I found certain aspects of law incredibly interesting.
Absolutely.
The type of practicing that I was probably going to be doing, I didn't find appealing whatsoever.
Mm.
So,
Yeah, there's so many different aspects and specialties when you practice law. And so getting back to your wonderful book, your novel, why did you choose an ancient religious figure like Josephus to write about?
Okay. This was like, I don't know, what do they say? It's 10% inspiration and 90% perspiration. Well, you still need some inspiration. And I didn't have any. You know, I tried to write a book probably 3 or 4, maybe even 5 times seriously throughout my life, but I really didn't have any inspiration. And each time I failed because of that. When I just happened to be, you know, studying and researching the ancient Israelites and Jesus, the historians who are always involved in these sort of documentaries in front of a wall of books, makes them look real important, of course. They kept on saying, the first century historian Josephus said, and I go, who is this guy Josephus? They keep on quoting him. I like to think I'm a history buff, and for me not to know of a historian that keeps on getting mentioned, it was frustrating. So I looked him up. You know, I went right to Wikipedia, you can imagine. And I couldn't believe the story. It was beyond belief. And then, I mean, we can get into the story, which we will in just a minute, but it was beyond belief. I was jaw-dropped. And what I couldn't believe even more when I started this book nearly 3 years ago now, no one had touched it, the story of Josephus, in nearly 100 years in historical fiction form. So it was almost like a challenge that I just had to take on.
Well, that's great, because I've never heard of Josephus, and one of the things that intrigued me was Josephus was a Hebrew priest turned Roman, adopted son of Caesar, but I didn't know that religious leaders who were Jews were called priests back in the day.
You know, yes, there were the ancient Israelites had a whole host of different, you know, functionaries. They had high priests whose duty was basically to perform animal sacrifice. And that's how you were blessed and got rid of your sins back then, is literally by slaughtering an animal. And the priests were trained in how to properly do it to appease God. You had the Sanhedrin, which was the religious tribunal, basically a bunch of judges who, when someone was accused of breaking a law or potentially violating God, they were the ones that would judge. You had ministers that were involved with all sorts of things like taxation, you know, managing city affairs and everything else. So, I mean, it was a fully developed society. And then on top of that, you had Rome and a Roman garrison stationed in the heart of Jerusalem, basically right next to the temple at Antonia Fortress, always watching out, making sure there's peace and that the coin is always being collected for the Roman Empire. So, you know, it's a complex society, but it's functioning at 66 AD before the rebellion.
So things haven't changed much. They're still coming for our coins, the government.
Well, you know, that is true. The absolute reason for Josephus saying that, you know, the rebellion basically began. The Romans basically charged into the Holy Temple and stole, I think the amount was seven gold talents, which is, you know, just an enormous amount of gold. We can't, you know, it would be like hundreds of pounds. You can imagine when you burst into someone's most holy house and just take whatever you want, doesn't sit well with the people who are being violated. And this was kind of like the last straw for many Jews in Jerusalem. And I should say, you know, back then, they weren't called Jews. They were called Judeans. You know, Jerusalem was part of Judea if you were from Galilee, you were a Galilean, kind of like Jesus, right? He's known as the Galilean or the Nazarene. So much different time, that's for sure.
Yeah, so why don't you explain to us who really was Josephus?
Sure.
Because was he a traitor,
perfect.
A patriot, an opportunist? Who was he?
So let me first start by saying that Josephus is the true life figure that Ben-Hur is based on. Lew Wallace, the author of Ben-Hur, wrote in his memoir that when he was studying and researching to write Ben-Hur, he was so enamored by the story, kind of the same way I was, that he essentially based Judah Ben-Hur on Josephus. And if you look at the stories and the parallels between our books, they're very close because, like I said, he based it on Josephus. So who was Josephus? He starts off as this Hebrew priest and comes from a royal lineage, so he says, and apparently he's so scholarly from such a young age, he actually records this, which sounds a little ridiculous. He says that from like the age of 14, the elder priests are coming to him with intricate questions of the Torah and this and that. And, you know, I mean, that sounds kind of silly, but he thinks of himself as a scholar of scholars. And when the uprising occurs in Jerusalem, he's kind of caught up in war the way that everybody gets caught up in war, where you may not want to do something, but when your country asks you to serve, what are you going to say? No, I don't want to. I don't want to help save everybody. So he was asked to be governor of Galilee and work on the army fortifications, you know, all that sort of stuff, because after they had expelled Rome from the uprising, they knew that the Romans were going to come back sooner or later. And they asked Josephus, or Joseph, son of Matthias at the time, to go up to Galilee, prepare the area so it wouldn't be a total slaughter when the Romans returned. Well, the Romans returned, and he becomes now a military commander leading a siege. So he goes from being a priest who is interested in scholarly pursuits to wielding a sword and commanding soldiers. And unfortunately, everybody is killed in the siege of Jotapata, except Joseph.
Oh.
He's taken prisoner. And the Romans, one of the things that if you know much about ancient Rome, you know that they loved to capture their enemies of, you know, especially like enemy foreign heads of state. And they loved to bring them back in chains to Rome and then execute them in the most spectacular way in front of, you know, 80,000 cheering drunk fools in the Colosseum to prove how strong and virile the empire was. And that was what was going to happen to Josephus, because he had caused a siege that they didn't even, the Romans, General Vespasian, the greatest general, didn't even expect this to be a siege. And they held out for over a month and a half and did quite a bit of damage to the Roman forces. So they were angry and they wanted to make a spectacle out of Josephus. However, in the process of him being transferred from Israel to Rome to face spectacle execution, the whole process, he ingratiates himself with the Roman elite. At every turn, people are just like, is this guy really that amazing? He just is incredibly impressive. He's smart. He's somewhat supposed to be good looking. You know, he's very, very, like I said, scholarly and knowledgeable. He speaks half a dozen languages, so he can communicate to anyone. basically. He becomes so ingratiated with the Roman elite, especially the Flavius family, which is Vespasian and Titus, that when Vespasian finally becomes Caesar, he goes, yeah, Joseph, son of Matthias, you're so cool, but even though we're still in the middle of an active war with your people, I want you to be my adopted son now, and I'm calling you Josephus, or Flavius Josephus, and giving you a pension for life and a state and my house's ring and name and all that sort of good stuff. It's
wow.
Really unbelievable, but that is the true story. And I've done my best to keep the crux of that story true in my novel. I have worked very hard to stay accurate to Josephus. And I'm sure there are things with details and this and that that have been licensed, I should say, a little bit. But for the most part, the crux of the story is honest to Josephus. And I think that it's done in a new, modern way where everyone can enjoy it, whether you're a history buff or not, whether you like religious works or not, whether you like, you know, battles and action. I mean, this is the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD, so there are huge battle scenes. There's something in here for everyone, very little swearing, 30 original illustrations. I actually worked with artists that live across the entire globe.
Consider it a historical novel?
It's a historical fiction. You know, it's based on a true event, which was the first Roman-Jewish war, which Josephus actually took part in. I mean, he didn't really fight too much after. He didn't really fight in the war, but he was part of the war in a big way. And then he wrote the definitive history just a couple years after it happened, which is something that is so rare. Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, I want to talk a little bit more about if he was a traitor, patriot, or opportunist. Can you stay with us?
Okay.
Because I have to take a
brief
moment here. We'll be right back,
okay. So
don't touch that dial.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Hi, welcome back. If you just joined us, we're speaking to Michael Antler, and he wrote the book, the award-winning book, and it is hot off the press, and it's called Josephus, a Novel. So let's get back, because we are in the process of talking about Josephus. And our guest, Michael, is going to tell us if he thought that Josephus was a hero, a traitor, a patriot, an opportunist. What do you personally think about him?
Okay, well, let me just start with a sort of baseline. And Josephus is considered the Benedict Arnold to the Jewish people, the greatest traitor in the entire history of Judaism. Now, through my studies, I think that's totally false. I mean, Did he turn and go for Rome? Yes. But he didn't do it because he was trying to sabotage the Hebrews. He did it because he was forced in the worst of situations, which is war, to survive. And it just so happened that by surviving, he did very well for himself. Now, you can call that being a traitor, but I see it more as being an opportunist and someone that is just trying to survive. If you know the history of this war, over 1 million people were killed. Almost everyone in Jerusalem died. So just to survive this thing was an impressive feat.
Absolutely, and that was a survival mode kicking in, and he definitely had a survival
mm-hmm.
mode. So do you didn't you travel to Jerusalem to do your research, or were you taking a vacation, or both?
Okay. So, yes, I actually did some quality research in Jerusalem. I went to the Israel Museum. I saw 2,000-year-old weapons that were used probably in the First Roman Jewish War, just really inspiring stuff, the coins from 2,000 years ago. And I also saw some really cool street musicians and architecture, and these are some of the things that I wove into my book. I also wrote on the beach of Tel Aviv, so I can say completely, yes, I did do work in Jerusalem and Israel, but it's a beautiful country, so I had a good time too.
Well, absolutely. It's one of the places I haven't visited, but have always wanted to visit. So is this a Christian-based novel?
Well, I kind of think of it more as like a Abrahamic-based, in the sense that it's not a religious work. It's a historical fiction. But religion plays a huge part. I mean, there are Hebrew and Christian prayers in the book, and certainly God is ever present throughout this novel. But it's not exactly Christian. However, I do have a great scene with St. Paul, who actually was on house arrest in Rome and got up and started preaching on the roof about Jesus, and so that is true. And I have a great scene where Josephus and St. Paul get into the classic argument between Christianity and Judaism, which, is great because we're still having that argument today.
Absolutely. And what about, don't you also have a scene about Nero's persecution of Christians?
Yes. Oh, Nero. Wow. What a guy. he decided crucifixion was too good for Christians, so he started burning them alive in thousands. There are actually, he actually had dinner parties and tied up Christians on top of logs to, make torchlights out of them for his dinner parties while they were burning alive. I mean, just absolutely horrid stuff. Nero, it's interesting because Nero, his Hebrew equivalent means 666, and he's the original Antichrist figure in history.
Wow, that's an interesting point.
When he dies, he doesn't say, "Oh, I hope I hope it's for the good of the Romans or this or that." He goes, "Oh, what a musician y'all have lost! What a musician dies in me!" Just complete narcissist, and murdered his mother, his wife, and his unborn baby, and several other family members. Just a true delight.
Serial killer here, psychopath. I think we still have some around we have to keep our eyes on.
Yeah, so well, he's pretty special, you know, when you...
Yeah, I'll say. So who's the book appropriate for, would you say?
Okay, I would say that certainly anyone 18 or older it's appropriate for. There is violence in the book. Like I said, it's the destruction of Jerusalem, so there's going to be some violence in the book. But there's very little swearing. I don't like when authors use lots of swear words, so I try and keep that to a minimum. There is some sex in the book, but that's one of the things that the Romans were real big on. That was part of their identity in a strange way. So I would say that anyone 18 or older that enjoys a good action, adventure, biblical, related story is going to love this. I think that this has mass appeal to people that want to learn about this great story that is so close to the Bible that has kind of been forgotten. In the 19th century and 18th and 17th, Josephus's works were the second most book owned by Christians. If you were wealthy enough to own another book than the Bible, you bought Josephus's work. It was considered that important. And we've kind of forgotten about his story. So I think that I've really brought it back in a strong and forceful way. And it's fun. It's fun.
Well, it's fun, and it's also, I like the fact that, you know, you call it fictional historical, but so much of it is true because we're still fighting the same battles in different ways as the world opens up and we become smaller and smaller. We see a lot of religious people who are still back in the day, you know, when they believe that, you know, these things are okay to punish your enemies. So it does enlighten and empower people to know that a lot of the things that are going on today were going on way back then, but we don't hear about it any longer. So I'm very happy that you wrote this book, and I can't wait to read the entire book. So I also understand that you have a month of games and giveaways, and you also have a website,
yes.
and you can tell us exactly about your giveaways and how to get your book as well.
Of course. All right, so you've got to promote the book, and I figured what better way to promote Josephus than instead of, you know, putting Facebook ads where you get cursed out for putting an ad on someone's page. We have games that someone wants to play, especially in the spirit of ancient Rome. Games were a huge thing. So what I've gone ahead and done is I purchased a nearly 2,000-year-old gold coin of Emperor Vespasian, an Aurus of Emperor Vespasian from and it's worth about $5,000. It's in incredible condition. You can actually see pictures of it on my website, josephusnovel.com, and that's the grand prize. So if you read my book, or if you just go to josephusnovel.com starting December 1st, there's no purchase necessary. Everyone can enter for free. But if you read the book and you answer questions and you do some other activities, you can get more entries towards weekly prizes and more entries towards the grand prize of this amazing, beautiful coin. That's really a piece of history beyond just being something valuable. You can potentially, you know, have this, like I said, beautiful gold coin in your collection, or some, you know, other fun, like weekly prizes, like Kindles and gift cards and things like that.
So how long is this contest going to be going on?
It's going to go from December 1st until the 31st, and we'll announce the grand prize on the first day of the year. So someone will have a great start of the year, I guarantee you.
So can they buy your book on the website, and can they buy it on Amazon too, or just the website?
Sure. Okay, so you can get my book on Amazon, absolutely. All you have to do is type in Josephus. You should see it come up. There's a sailboat with a cross on the front of it. You'll see my name. If you go to my website and you're in the U.S. or Canada and you buy from my website Josephus Novel, I'll sign my book for you and, you know, maybe throw in like a little goodie or something. But the games will take place on JosephusNovel.com. You can get my book in Kindle hardcover and paperback form on Amazon and some third-party online booksellers right now, though.
Yes, and Josephus is spelled J-O-S like Sam, E-P like Paul, H like Harry, U-S like Sam, Josephus, J-O-S-E-P-H-U-S.
I kind of just think like Joseph with a U.S. on the end for the United States.
Very good.
It's pretty easy. Yeah.
So my last question, Michael, is what do you like especially, you personally like, especially about your book, your novel?
Okay. There are, I don't want to sound like a braggart. There are a couple things, but the two big things I really like are, I should say, one is the effort I gave to the sonorous quality of the words. You know, I think sound is incredibly important. Sound means a lot. And when you play with sound, with words, you can convey more of a message if you use the right words. So I really made an effort to not just put in words because it was easy and quick, but to choose the right words to make it sound right and special. And I'm not a thesaurus guy. I don't like authors that make you feel low by putting in these ridiculous words that have no business being there. It's like, okay, you know how to use a thesaurus. Good for you. I do too. But that's not what I'm about. I'm about telling a story in a fun, non-pretentious way that is as clever and beautiful with everything you can potentially do with words. And I think that's something that a lot of authors don't give as much of attention today. So I like and I also like...
I think that's great.
And the other thing I was going to say is, is my book, it really looks good. And I know you're not supposed to judge a book by its cover, but it's a pretty book. It was designed beautifully, and there are 30 original illustrations. They all look great. So even if you like pictures, you know, this book is for you.
That's perfect. And so... do you have another book coming up, or an idea for another book?
Yeah. So Satoshi Nakamoto is the anonymous pseudonym for the founder, creator of Bitcoin, who we don't know is. But through some research that I've done, I kind of have a pretty, and his story is about as wild as Josephus. So I'm thinking about, I'm thinking about how to finish this novel in the most satisfying way. I think I have it, but I'm going to come out with Satoshi, which describes this essentially criminal mastermind who's now serving multiple life sentences for everything you can imagine that is actually the creator of Bitcoin, and he's going to be the richest man in the world in prison for the rest of his life.
Oh my gosh. So money can't always buy you freedom.
No. But you know, if he gets into the trillions, I imagine it might be able to buy him freedom. And we'll see. I don't know.
Well, it sounds great. And we'll look forward to talking to you about your next book. And we wish you much success with Josephus, a novel. Get it on Amazon. Go to his website. And keep up the good work, Michael. It was great talking to you about your wonderful work, your wonderful novel, Josephus.
Thank you
so
much, Rose. It was a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. Bye-bye. And Michael Antler has left the building. And go out and get his book, Josephus, a novel, very exciting book. It's a fictional historical novel. And on that note, we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to come back with the issues of the day. So don't touch that dial.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Yes, and we're back with the issues of the day. And there are so many things to talk about. But by the way, if you are looking for a keepsake for the 2020 elections and you love to have a special mug for your personal use or to keep as a memory for yourself, as a gift, for your family, friends, or you're just looking for a gift or a special mug. This particular keepsake mug is very colorful, very whimsical, fun. You'll love it. So go to onecupmore.com, onecupmore.com, onecupmore.com. And by the way, I designed that 2020 keepsake mug. So take a look at it and be sure to order it for birthdays, for holidays, for election keepsake, or for Christmas, because there are limited quantities. But the rest, you can also look at the rest of the beautiful cups and fun cups as well, or mugs, cups and mugs. One cup more. So let's enter into the issues of the day, because we have so many things happening in our country right now. And one of the most important things I just read about was Senator Ron Wyden. He's a Democrat, and I hope this becomes not an issue for Democrats or for Republicans, but that they can come together and correct this problem we're having with discrimination and silencing mostly the right, not so much the Democrats, but also silencing our freedom of speech, opinion, media. This is not a good thing for Americans or America. And it's trampling on our freedom of speech and opinion and thoughts and press, basically. So it says that Senator Ron Wyden helped create the big tech industry, but now he wants to hold it accountable. I'm all for that, because I think they should break up power and too much control over our Constitution more than the senators, more than the President of the United States, who they've also silenced many times. The Senate's biggest privacy hawk talks about Section 230 and sending Mark Zuckerberg to prison. This is by Sarah Morrison, August 5th, 2020, on Vox. Senator Ron Wyden is ready to send the CEO of Facebook to prison, and he has the bill to do it. When Mark Zuckerberg tells a whopper to the federal government about his privacy policy, not only would he face a fine, but he can face prison time, Wyden said. In October 2019, he introduced the Mind Your Own Business Act, which he hopes will create a set of privacy and security standards that big tech companies and data brokers must follow and hold people like Zuckerberg accountable. Do not, especially if they lie to the government about it. Nobody else has said, hey, if you rip people off that way, you're going to face the prospect of time in prison. This is very serious, and I'm glad that we have a Democrat on board with the GOP, because Senator Graham is also going to hold hearings on these issues with social media and the monopoly that is happening and the silencing of freedom of speech and your private information. I get the distinct impression that the Oregon Democrat doesn't like being lied to. Wyden is not alone. Several of his colleagues were similarly outraged when a 2018 New York Times report about Facebook's data sharing agreements cast doubt on the veracity of the CEO's earlier testimony that the company doesn't sell data. But Wyden's the only one who wrote the law that made it possible for the social media giant to exist. It goes on to say, Wyden recently explained his outrage to me via Zoom from his tastefully appointed kitchen in Portland and me from my considerably less refined, this author says, in my living room in New York City. The 71-year-old career politician has folksy manner that almost makes you forget that he's one of the most powerful Democrats in the Senate. He's also the co-creator of Section 230, the Internet-defining 1996 law that has recently become the go-to target of Republican attacks on big tech companies. In the past couple of months alone, the Trump administration and its allies have pushed an executive order, Department of Justice recommendations, and bills in Congress, all threatening to take Section 230 protections away from companies, she says, that will believe treat conservative and liberal speech differently. But that is true. They definitely treat Republicans, GOP, and Trump and supporters on the right differently than they do the Democrats. It is an absolute truth because I have completed a year-long report proving that the people on the right are treated differently, and they are more apt to be banned, shadow banned, banned forever, permanently, suspended more often, and accused of hate speech, misinformation, false information, even if it's true, and it targets anyone that they support on social media or any information that now people are complaining they can't read about the Joe Biden and Hunter Biden and Biden family scandals and those of communist China. So I'm hoping that the Republicans and the Democrats will work together to break up the monopoly, to protect our privacy, and to be fair and uphold the freedom of speech guaranteed to every American. That's a very, very important, and those are going to be very, very important critical hearings. I hope they follow through and they aren't just all talk. And then on the other hand, we have critical race theory is socialist, anti-God, and anti-American. This is by WND. And it's written by Michael Massey. This is the second in a multiple part view regarding my unapologetic contempt for the pernicious heterodoxy prostituted as critical race theory, CRT. As I stated in part one of this unmasking of the satanic lie of CRT, not only am I a born again Christian, I am also an ordained minister, reverend, he says. As such, any acceptance and or attempt to inject even a modicum of truth to a lie of Satan is blasphemous, which is why I'm not hesitant to reserve my harshest condemnation for those churches and ministers who preach, support, and or organize that God, which God condemns. So he says this is his truth, and he also says, as many know, I advocate for a colorblind society. This is the important part. The entire premise of CRT is based upon the fallacious supposition that a colorblind society is a form of white superiority that ignores discrimination and economic inequality based upon skin color. This is the argument those advancing the abomination of CRT use to circumvent Dr. Martin Luther King's most significant speech in which he places content of character above skin color. I totally agree with this because God is colorblind. The only people who bring up color and use color appear to be the Democrats because they're always pushing race, dividing America by race, by ethnicity, calling people black or brown, or I haven't heard them call them yellow or red, but that's basically what they're doing. Everyone is a human being. God does not see color. Everyone who is legally in this USA and a legal citizen is an American, and that's how people should be seen, as an American. I can see somebody who looks different than me, and so can you. I don't need to point out that a black person is black. I can see that with my own eyes. There are also white people who are black and who have black genes in them. There have been people have known people and have been in the news where a black woman gives birth to white babies or a white woman gives birth to black babies because there's a gene somewhere in their family genealogy. So the only thing that continually pointing out race and ethnicity does in America is it diminishes the Americanism of those races and those persons who are Asian or Hispanic or Muslim or black or whatever you are, Native American persons. So why do we have to have this division if we are all Americans? Why aren't we just called Americans? Why can't we just call each other by our names? Why do we have to be divided by race and ethnicity and use it for votes? Because that's what it is used for. It is used for votes, and it's used to convince these people that they are not, they do not reach the standard of being an American. They do not reach the standard of looking like an American. They do not reach the standard of being treated as an American or being called just, not just, but being called a proud American who is contributing to our society. So this has led to riots. It's led to burning down cities. It's led to hate the police, the Border Patrol, and ICE, because there are people within our government who are domestic enemies that seek to undermine the United States Constitution, the Bill of Rights, our history, our traditions, our Christian foundation. It doesn't mean you have to be a Christian. It means that our laws are rooted in the Bible and the Ten Commandments, making us a Christian foundation. And all of our laws are based in the Ten Commandments and the Bible. And that those laws are based and rooted in a Christian foundation. And it's called the United States Constitution. And we must preserve the United States Constitution and fight back against these socialists, communists, Marxists who are donating through the creation of George Soros and the funding of George Soros to create hundreds of nonprofit organizations using our charitable status to cause millionaires to donate and billionaires to donate millions of dollars to these organizations under the guise of being charities when the real goal is political, to undermine the U.S. Constitution, usher in the New World Order, Marxism, socialism, communism, lawlessness, and to create chaos in the United States of America. So it is a lawless nation, so that these China and their CCP Marxist, communist, tyrannical individuals can come in, usher in, and eliminate the United States Constitution, remove the president from office, and usher in tyranny like you've never seen before. It would end America. So it is your duty, your obligation as an American, regardless of color. We are all Americans, regardless of color, regardless of ethnicity. If you are a legal citizen of this country, it is your duty and your obligation to vote. Vote wisely. Vote for life, because without enough natural-born American babies being born on this country without being killed by abortionists and supported by the left, then we will not have enough natural-born American babies to preserve this nation, to preserve the United States of America, to preserve God, to preserve the Bible, to preserve the foundation of this nation, a Christian nation foundation. You do not have to be a Christian, but it is our foundation to secure our borders and to implement legal citizenship, vetting, backgrounds, and deport bad dudes from our nation who are coming here for the freebies and to commit crimes or to undermine and infiltrate into our government, as we already have domestic enemies, and infiltrate into our government as foreign enemies to take down our freedom, liberty, and rights. God bless you. God bless America. God bless everyone around the world. And may we soon be free of the isolation, the distancing, and the mask, because less than 1% of the population dies. Most recover. Remember that. God bless you.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.